this is going to be probably the worst part of the show right here, because I can't talk to myself for any length of time.
I'm back.
Thank you. Thank you, God.
Sorry, did you just wonder where I went for there for a moment?
I kind of, but I was sitting there not knowing what to talk about because typically people don't like to hear about other people.
I don't think so. It depends whether or not those other people are interesting and are more interesting than themselves. Mm-hmm. They don't like to hear people talk about themselves, not when they're in a conversation with them. On radio, on the other hand, it's a completely different story, because the only reason you're there is to listen.
I gotcha.
Well, do you know what narcissism is?
Narcissism is a disbelief that you are the only thing that matters.
Sort of. Well, you know what psychopathy is, not caring about other people and being totally full of yourself?
Right? Narcissism.
Not the same thing. All psychopaths are narcissists, but not all narcissists are psychopaths. Okay? You ever heard of Muhammad Ali?
I have.
I'm the best in the world. You will be looking up at me from the floor. All right? Is he full of crap? Or is he just that good? He's just that good. Right? Is he bragging about himself? Sure he is. Does he have reason to brag? Sure he does. A narcissist. What you call a benign narcissist. Somebody who has many of the same traits and characteristics of a psychopathic narcissist, but none of the drawbacks in personality that would actually make them hurt other people or feel good about that. And in fact, Muhammad Ali went from being a heavyweight champion of the world, and he spent the rest of his time doing charity, you know, with all his money and everything. Doesn't sound terribly narcissistic, but actually that's what a narcissist generally does. And same with Bruce Lee, helped a huge quantity of people understand deep amounts about training, spirituality, martial arts, really gave the Asians in America actually something to look up for, something to strive for, because before Bruce Lee's time, when he was a boy and everything, Asians were seen as very second-class citizens, because there was no real Asian heroes at all around at the time, until Bruce Lee came along. And he changed everything. He made everything better for everybody. And that was his intention. He was a narcissist. You know? That's the thing, and I'm one too. And one of the things about narcissists is that we like to talk about ourselves. We like to hear the sound of our own voice. So naturally, I got into radio. And it's about having a real strong belief in yourself, but also having a deep, profound responsibility for the gifts and skills that you've got. You know, I've got the gift of the gab better than most people. I can edit videos and radio shows faster than 90% of the people in the industry, and I haven't had one day's training. It's because, just like Muhammad Ali, yes, I am that freaking good. However, it means that if you are really good at something and you have skills of that nature way better than other people, don't hold it over them. Help them. Okay?
Help them become as skilled.
You don't even necessarily have to help them become as skilled, because you can just help them to realize that I developed these skills and I used my talents. You find out what your talents are. You find out what your skills are, and you will develop them. And it's just that simple. Not everybody will be able to do what I can do. However, there are people who need the things that I can do, like really need them. Activists, for example, who are exposing scumbaggery, very rarely will have a lot of airtime given to them by mainstream media. So I use my skills as a gift of the gab douchebag with a microphone, record a lovely interview with them. We have some fun. People get to know the real them. and they also get to know about the real issues. And I publish that and then give it out to everybody for free and then ask people, if you support this way of doing things, then you can give me a gift of like $5 a month or anything. You don't have to pay. You get it all for free. Just if you want to see it continue, contribute. And hopefully, I'll be able to survive. And for the last couple of years, that's the methodology we've been running on. And it's been working. Mm. Now, the live stream on the YouTube seems to be down.
Really?
Yeah. Either that or it's on a really delayed broadcast. Did you have like a long silence at some point just before?
Video call ended because of a server error. Okay, let me check that. Shoot. Hold on, let me check.
How about this? We're recording on the Skype anyway, so I'll just keep continuing while you sort that out. I was wondering to myself the other day, exactly what is it that I want to achieve? You know, as a narcissist, as just an ordinary dude.
All right, I am joining the hangout, so we're okay. About to restart.
Okay.
I apologize for the delay, and whatever happened, I still don't know. But we are back, and we are live. Vince is still with us, I believe.
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't know where we were when the stream ended.
Okay. I don't know. But I think we'll go over the narcissist thing again, because I'm a narcissist and I like to talk about myself.
Therefore, you like to talk about narcissists.
Oh, yeah. It's actually quite rare for narcissists to talk about themselves as narcissists, because a lot of them are like, there's a stigmatization, basically. Kind of like if somebody says, oh, I'm autistic or whatever, or I've got Asperger's. Like my friend Mike, for example, he has Asperger's. I've known him for 2 years. I didn't notice anything different, you know? It's like somebody labels you with something and they say that it's a bad thing. It's like, well, actually, some of the things...
Some people have a theory that these mental disorders are either fake in some ways or created by us.
It's the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, the DSM, which was started up by psychiatry, which is a lot of crack. You'd have to be smoking a lot of crack in order to think that it was real, more or less, because that's how they do all their studies. They're basically just sitting there high on drugs, messing with people, you know. I mean, for example, here's a real great scientific test to see whether or not somebody can be cured of their mental illness of believing in fairies. We're going to strap them to an electric chair and dunk them in ice-cold water periodically every single day for a year. Sound real scientific, right? Wait, doesn't it sound like torture? And doesn't it sound like the people who would do this to another human being sound like maniacs? Oh, wait.
Psychopaths.
And welcome to the psychiatric profession. This is how it began. And it now is continuing in much the same way, except instead of dunking people in cold water to torture them, you give them a drug that is a hell of a lot more effective. So that way they can torture themselves, and all you have to do is remind them to do it several times a day. And you can sit back and feed off the pain while getting kickbacks from the pharmaceutical industry and then going to Tahiti on the weekend. Life could not be sweeter. I have noticed that there is a distinct lack of ability to make money if you're not screwing people over. All right? It's actually really quite difficult. If you're giving people a good deal, not sleight of hand or fraud, then you're going to struggle. Right?
Agreed. I can prove that. Well, I'm sure you can too, being a salesman.
Well, it's known as a self-evident truth, right? Something that nobody argues with because they've seen it and it's pretty obvious. Scumbags make all the money. The good people get left out in the cold to die and shiver, right? And even now, when a pastor or a priest or something of that nature goes to under the a freeway underpass to give food and water to the homeless people there who used to have jobs, who used to have homes, who used to have families who now live with their own family and kick them out because they couldn't afford to feed them or something like that. Those pastors and priests are now getting fined by the cities that they're doing this in because it's illegal to feed the homeless.
Yeah, that's a bit insane.
No, it's not insane. It's psychopathic. Psychopathy makes sense, but you have to be crazy in order for it to make sense, yeah? You have to be a psychopath. All right, so imagine for a moment that you're a ruthless criminal psychopath with more money than God, and you wanted to create a system by which the world would work. Don't you think the way the world works now is exactly what that system would look like?
Yes, entirely.
Mm-hmm. And that's because psychopaths control the world. It's not like one psychopath in the top center and he controls everything. It's that the system is hierarchical. Every system is hierarchical. Doesn't matter whether you're a politician or a journalist or a gas station attendant. There's a hierarchy. The fresh meat comes in, and then they get chopped away and chopped away and chopped away and chopped away until there's only a few left right at the very top. And I use the analogy of the stagnant pond. Where do you locate the scum in a stagnant pond? It's right at the top, isn't it? And what does scum do when it covers the entire surface of a pond? It chokes out all the light and nutrients of the sun to everything beneath them, and they wither and die. You see? Works, doesn't it? As an analogy. That's what these things try to do. And because I'm a narcissist, I know a hell of a lot about how these people think about themselves, because I think about myself much the same way that they do. Except I've got guilt. I've got remorse.
You've got a conscience.
I've got a conscience. I've got humor. I've got creativity. I have a lot of strengths that they do not. They would say that these things that I have are weaknesses. I would say that their lack of empathy, their lack of humor, their lack of creativity are their greatest weaknesses. Right? And it's kind of like a war between benign narcissists who are great leaders in most cases and really, really care about their people. Usually they get assassinated. But versus psychopaths who have no compulsion to help other people in any way, shape, or form, unless, of course, it's them getting the bulk of the help, you know. It's like, oh, we'll donate to this and everything. It'll be great. But how many people did you actually help after all of those donations? Well, all the tax-free foundations got a cut. Well, hold on a second. How many people do they help? Well, the people on their payroll. And how many people do they help? Well, basically nobody. Okay. So you just had like a 9-way filter feed of donation money where a whole bunch of people get to clip the ticket and nobody who you're saying you're collecting the money for actually receives any benefit from it, and you can live with yourself? Sure I can. You can sleep at night? Sure I can. How can you sleep at night? Well, because I'm a psychopath. I mean, when you go to sleep at night, you people with a conscience, you stay up and you think about things, things that maybe you regret, or things that you maybe wish to do better in the day, or things that you're dreaming about, or whatever. I don't. Hmm.
Heads out as soon as
the head hits the pillow. I'm talking as a psychopath. But anyway, go ahead.
Can I use that as my excuse? Is that that's why I'm not sleeping at night?
Sure. You know, you can use any excuse you want, bro. if you believe it, go for your life, son.
I don't sleep well at night. I have a sort of a sleeping disorder.
Okay. Well, I'll actually send you a link, and this will be a good thing, because that video I told you about the health thing I filmed on the weekend earlier on in the last segment by Dr. Sam Shea, he actually used to suffer from chronic insomnia himself, and he's just when you've been doing this a long time, you might find out, you might not, because most people who get into talk radio fail within the first month or so. It's not an easy industry. It's probably one of the hardest jobs that people do. You know, you have to have the kind of right mindset. More or less, you just kind of have to be a bit of a know-it-all douchebag. I mean, you know, if you're a know-it-all douchebag, you'll make a really good radio show host. I mean, really.
And I'm too nice.
No, but even nice people can still be a bit of a know-it-all douchebag, you know what I'm saying? You know, it just has to be part of your raft of personality traits. Like, I'm a nice guy, I'm a philanthropist, I'm a genius, and I'm a know-it-all douchebag. you see how that works? But this guy, yeah, he's suffering from a lot of insomnia, and his presentation, again, with those 10 different aspects of health that you need to watch out for, like all the categories of health and your psychological well-being and your sleep and your food and your electromagnetic radiation exposure and everything, all this range of factors come in. You have to study health, everybody does, for years and years and years, just like the medical doctors do, so that you know your own health as well or better than a doctor would. You know, because you still have to tell them where it hurts. If they knew your health better than you do, they'd be able to tell you where it hurts, wouldn't they? You know, I always thought that was kind of strange. It's like, I know more about your health than you do. Really, tell me where it hurts. You can't, can you? It's because you don't actually know. It's because you're not actually in this body. I am. I have to live here, you know.
I don't even listen to my doctors anymore. They told me that I have no nerves in my heart, my lungs, or my intestines. And that I shouldn't be alive right now. But here I am, and they told me I was going to die 3 times. So I just stopped listening to them.
Yeah, I think that's an important life lesson. Is that when a doctor says you're going to die...
Because they're pretty much idiotic half the time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like, if you accepted everything you listened to and you never really thought about it, you'd turn into a doctor, all right? Because you just regurgitate that stuff over and over and over again. Because if you've got high intelligence, high ability for memory, recall, and things of that nature, but no creativity and no ability to discern facts... And then you go into medical school. You know, you'll fly through. You won't have any problems. You won't be affected by the silo mentality that tries to push people to the outside who don't vibe with the exact same kind of bars. You know what I'm saying?
Kind of.
Well, it's kind of like you can tell a doctor something, and this isn't all. This is just some of them. The really, really brainwashed ones. You can tell them something as simple as having good nutrition will prevent disease, and they won't believe you and they'll call you a quack. Okay? Now, incidentally, these are people who've taken the quote-unquote Hippocratic Oath, which is, of course, done by Hippocrates, who is incidentally a naturopath, nutritionist, chiropractor in ancient Greece. And who do, what do medical doctors all say is quackery? Chiropractic and naturopathy and nutrition? What don't they teach in major medical schools now that are all funded by Rockefeller drug companies and whatnot? Well, yeah, that's right. They don't teach nutrition. Why is that? You know? They don't.
I stopped listening to nutrition specialists.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, quote unquote. They told me that I should go on a feeding tube because I can't eat, and 15 years later, I am told I eat too much.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's organic, a lot of organic growing methods and things of that nature. I mean, I'm not sure if you're capable of getting around in the garden and growing your own fruit and vegetables and things of that nature without the use of arms and legs, but I've known a lot of people personally, actually, who've had 3 months to live, 6 months to live, or saying we're going to have to cut out your everything from your throat down to your anus, basically. You're just going to have a straight tube. You're going to have no digestive system whatsoever. and they're just like, frack that. I'm not listening to these people who want to cut me up and use me for some kind of experiment.
If they're going to put me on a tube for the rest of my life, what's the point in living?
Exactly. So he gets out in the garden, and he's suffering, like, huge pains all the time. And he's still out in this garden. He's still working at this stuff, and he's still eating the food. And then after a while, the pain starts to go away. Then it goes away completely. And he keeps eating the food and keeps eating the food. Not only does the pain go, but he starts to actually feel something he haven't felt in his entire life. At the age of 11, he felt happy. He felt rested. And the doctors would have killed him had he listened to them. And now he's a filmmaker, made of a whole documentary about health called Real and Raw. It's produced by my former producer, somewhat fabulous Mitch Santel. You know, it's amazing what happens when you stop listening to authority figures, isn't it? What you can achieve. Because all these rules and everything that they follow, they seek to do one thing, suppress creativity. All right. Now, they have to suppress your creativity and tell you that stuff isn't possible because they haven't got any left. All right. It destroyed theirs, and now they need to pass it on and destroy yours because they don't really have much of a choice in the matter. And that's kind of what I've found is the real thing that you need to be looking for anybody that you trust or care about or anybody that you hold as a close friend. Do they have creativity? You know, are they genuine? Are they just going to hamstring me and BS me one day? And it's really actually, as simple as that sounds like, it's actually quite difficult. Because specifically, psychopaths know what those people sound like to people. And are really good mimics. So you'll know a psychopath for 10 years. Think he'd be your best friend. And then all of a sudden, he destroys everything in your life. For no reason. Out of the blue, completely. You're like, what the hell? You know, that's what psychopaths are like, man. They're total infiltrators. In fact, it's funny. We're talking to Thomas Sheridan, wrote literally a book on it, Puzzling People, The Labyrinth of the Psychopath, I believe it was called. And he's got a new one out. I can't remember the title, but he and I and a number of other researchers are actually starting to really think about the psychopath equation. Because what's really problematic about it is that it's not a modern phenomenon. We've just given it a new name. We've given it the name psychopath, and we've called it a mental disorder. It used to be called demon possession. It used to be called jinn. It used to be called black magic. These kind of things. They used to be called archons, controllers. They used to be called snake demons. All of these things that mythologically are out there have been described, and interestingly enough, all have the exact same characteristics, the same behavioral patterns, the same obsessions, the same desires, and the same fears as psychopaths.
Well, the argument that people would use, and I like mythology, I'm pretty much trying to play devil's advocate here, but the argument people would use in that situation is these demons are these mythological demons.
Okay,
I'm really losing my train of thought here.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. I'll make your point for you. You know Ted Bundy? What would you call him? He's a monster. He's a monster, right?
I don't really know him.
Okay, he killed 25 really beautiful young women, and he was a very attractive man, and he smiled at them, and he had a broken arm, and he said, "Oh, can I have some help or whatever?" And then boom, he got you. When we were over the entire of the United States, you know.
That to me is monstrous because.
All right, so imagine from this point to here, this conversation is being recorded, and in 1,000 years, they hear this conversation about Ted Bundy, the monster, and they do carvings or whatever about this Bundy monster, etc. Same thing that I'm talking about here is all these things in ancient lore and whatever that we're starting to dismiss were at one point real deal kind of stuff that people had a great awareness of. But they weren't doing it in a literal format in a lot of ways. We're talking about characteristics, mythology here, okay?
Uh-huh.
Where you can inflate the word monster to become not just a characteristic of a human being who's a monster, but an actual creature. And I think that's possibly where the differentiation comes on that. But the
you start talking about these mythological creatures that have the characteristics of a psychopath, you get into discussions of people such as David Icke.
Yeah, the reptilian thing. And
it's a fascinating theory. I like reading what he has to say.
I mean, see, I'm still on the fence about whether or not it's literal or whether or not it's figurative. I don't know. What I do know is that when we talk about the reptilian brain, incidentally, the only part of the brain that is active in a psychopath. Everything else seems sort of dead. All the emotional parts, creativity part, a lot of the frontal lobe and everything, it's kind of geared towards that. The lower reptilian brain is what governs our instincts, a lot of the things, you know, desire for food or women or stuff like that, or gut instincts.
Could I give my interpretation of his theory?
Mm-hmm.
I think he was on to something when he said this, but I think the part where he slips up is when he starts talking about the shapeshifter. I believe that David Icke got some form of evidence that about the reptilian part of the brain. And when you start talking about the reptilian theory, you get into the discussion about the reptilian brain. I think that these people are trapped in the conscious of the reptilian brain. And I think that's where the theory lies. I think that's where you have some scientific basis. Maybe that part of the brain overtook the rest.
No, I don't think so. So you can't confine it to that. There's a lot of other aspects to psychopathy that are, for lack of a better word, mystical. They have an uncanny ability to avoid hazards, right? Like, it's really strange. Like Castro, they tried to assassinate him a number of times. The guy's a complete psychopath, loves his cigars, poison cigars, exploding cigars, and all other methods of. But he just walked out of every single one of their traps. They couldn't understand how the hell this guy knew. He also couldn't. They also couldn't understand why it's always the good guys that get assassinated, and the evil guys just keep running the world, right? Well, there's two reasons for that. One, psychopaths can sense threats in a kind of psychic sort of way. And the other part is only good people would want to assassinate bad people, and good people generally aren't professional assassins. you know?
I can present a counter to that theory that good people aren't professional assassins with a modern example, actually extremely modern. On last Friday, the previous Friday we had Jake Rockefeller, the grandson of David Rockefeller, a big banker, died in a plane crash. And he wasn't the first banker to go. He is actually there have been 24 assassinations of bankers since January of 2013.
Yeah, and 500 the year before that.
And 500 the year before that. I did not know about that, actually.
Yeah. There's a lot of patsies and a lot of people like that. Psychopaths can die. Sure they can. And usually it's because they get killed by other psychopaths who are trying to cover up their tracks and using them as useful idiots, you know. And as I say, these are just general ideas. If you want really specific things, like total specific, incorruptible, you know, this is the 100% truth from me, you're probably not going to get it because I honestly don't know. This is only the I've only talked to the top researchers in the field on a personal basis for hours at length, and that's all I know. Some people think that sounds like a lot. I think it does, but it doesn't mean I know everything.
No, there's no way to know everything about a topic.
Yeah.
You can only know if you talk to every professional in the field. I'm losing my train of thought again. Can you sort of repeat my thought to me, and maybe I'll get it back?
Sorry, I was just losing mine there as well. It's it's 9:14 a.m. and I got up at like 5:15 this morning to try and check the times on the zone on this and the world clock and everything to figure this out. So you know you'll have to forgive me at the same time.
You're fine.
We were talking about psychopathy and their ability to keep themselves out of trouble. They also have some kind of a hive mind. That's something interesting as well that we've noticed, is that they seem to be able to recognize each other, but they don't like each other. Yeah, like they don't have friends. What they do is they have what they call an entourage. So you'll have. I don't know if you've ever seen people like this, but you can spot psychopaths and their behaviors pretty early on, so long as you know what to look for. Somebody who always needs somebody under them, okay, like underlings, little like I used to be bullied at school, right? And there was usually one central bully who was the psychopath, and then these other two little tools that he had around with him who like did everything he said and sucked up to him and things like that. I don't know if you've ever seen this. But that's kind of how they work in the real world. How many people do you normally see with the average presidential candidate walking around all the time? Heaps, man. He's got like a whole motorcade. He's got all these advisors. He's got staff. He's got bodyguards. He's always up in front of the crowds, getting all this attention and that sort of thing. Mate, ideal position for a psychopath, you know. And they'd love it. They need it. It's like this feeding thing. If I may, let's take the demon thing into context here. Let's say it feeds on fear. Like literally, the human mind, when you're feeling afraid, emits certain frequencies. And so some people are saying that there's this extra-dimensional thing. I'm not sure how I feel about it, but this is just what some people have said. That there's this extra-dimensional wavelength out there that you can actually pick up energy. You can feed off it. You can feed organisms on it, like psychopathic creature demon possessions or whatever. Kind of like a mind parasite, if you will, that attaches to the brain stem, controls a lot of your actions and thoughts to inflict fear, pain, and suffering on the non-psychopathic entities around you so that it can feed off of your fear. It can feed off of your pain. It can feed off of your suffering. Yeah? Mm. Suddenly a whole lot of behavior methodologies seem to make a whole lot more sense. Like as I was talking about psychiatry before, about them basically just torturing people and saying that this is their way to get them well. It's exactly what a psychopath would do. They tell you the exact opposite of whatever their intentions are. Okay, so you sort of like take it and invert it. So if they say they're here to help you, they're here to hurt you. If they say they're here to sort out your problems, they're there to make more of them. If they're here to protect your property, they're there to take it from you. That kind of thing. If they say you want to invite me in because I'm going to be a good house guest, don't invite them in. They're not a good house guest. You know, that sort of thing. They do the opposite of everything.
If somebody has to justify,
they'll make stuff up.
You, then chances are you're gonna regret helping them.
Yeah, and here's the thing: don't be a sucker. All right, and it works both ways. Don't suck off of other people. If you're not a beneficial parasite like me, I do suck off the community and ask for donations and things like that. I admit that. I'm not ashamed of it, though, because I feel that I do something to earn my way in this world and that people have a choice about whether or not they give something to me. And I give something back to them, much like a beneficial parasite on a shark or something would do. So I try to look at myself in the worst ways possible and then try to justify them from looking at it from a bad angle rather than looking at myself in a great positive light and then just saying, oh, aren't I great, and not even questioning myself, you know. That's a problem a lot of people don't work out, which is a stupid thing. It's just quite simple, you know. Think of yourself in the worst possible way and then try and figure out how to live with yourself. And you go, oh, I'm not actually that much of a douchebag. There you go, son. You're sweet ass. Now, I was talking about with in terms of psychopaths and what have you, in the spiritual aspects, la 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 la. Yeah, just sounds a whole bunch like repeating the whole old school thoughts of angels and demons to me, you know? And
or the Greek philosophy of Zeus and Hades.
Yeah, and you see the same paradigm. It's just the exact same story over and over and over again. So somebody asked me the other night, you know, what kind of revolution do I want? And I said, I don't want a revolution, because the word revolution means to go in a frickin' circle. I want to break the cycle, you know. I want something new. I want something that hasn't existed before. Imagine a world, a technologically advanced, deeply spiritual, caring, loving world where psychopaths are kept from positions of power, are kept from the limelight, so that their fear and the pain and the suffering and the deception that they feed off will no longer be a food source, and they'll all die off. So one person said to me, he says, you put a psychopath on a desert island alone with nobody to subjugate, he'll die. The parasite literally dies. It can't support itself without causing pain, fear, and suffering. And I was like, whoa, it's kind of freaky, don't you think? Sorry about getting all deep on here, but, you know, this is...
this is the kind of show I wanted.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because I don't know about you, but... I've got pride and I've got hatred. These are two things that I don't see a particularly positive aspects of myself, but I still got them. So
I don't have a lot of pride. I try to keep it out because it just clouds my judgment in the end.
Yeah. Well, see, I'm only proud of things that I can actually point to. You know. So if somebody says, "Oh, Vinny, you haven't done anything from the fluoride movement," actually, I have. Here's this presentation over here by Dr. Paul Connett, who told me it was the best presentation anybody's ever edited for him, even better than the Alex Jones interview that he did that has 48,000 hits on my YouTube channel from New Zealand. Okay? So yeah, I've got something to point to. I've got some evidence of the good that I do. And I'm proud of these things that I do. And I don't see that as a bad thing. What I do see as a bad thing... about being proud about stuff is not being prepared to take criticism. I'll take criticism, but as long as it's criticism, not abuse. And I've learned to differentiate because, you know, I was a fat kid. You cannot go through high school, anywhere in the world, as a fat kid and not go home with a head full of abuse and knowing what abuse sounds like, knowing what it feels like. And so when you get that kind of stuff off of people on Facebook comments, YouTube comments, or anything like that, there's a little SpongeBob picture with a rainbow between his hands just going, "Block! And the scum is gone!" Yeah. Just get out of my way. Because, look, at the end of the day, I've become sort of like this minor celebrity. I know how egotistical that sounds, but please let me explain. I went to a gas station, and I had somebody recognize me and come up and talk to me while I was pumping gas. Okay? That's kind of a bit of a minor celebrity sort of phenomenon, don't you think? Especially if the very next day I went to a cafe and the exact same thing happened again. Somebody was just ordering their coffee and then they came up and had a conversation with me because they recognized me. Okay? And something occurred to me. Very shocking. There's like 3 million hits on my YouTube channel. X amount of millions of people have heard of me. So many people listen to me. However, the awareness of each other doesn't go both ways, does it? The amount of people who know my name does not equate with the amount of people who listen to me for whom I can know their name. Okay? So is there a Trisha out there? Is there a Sadie? Is there a Sarah? Is there a Bob? Is there a Parker? Is there, you know? There's so many other names. I only need to, and they only need to remember one. If they want to remember my name, it's Vinny Eastwood, which is, you know, pretty easy. Eastwood, like Clint Eastwood, Vaneva the Wire because it's the most important question?
When I told you, or when I told somebody I was doing a show with you, they asked if you were related to Clint Eastwood.
Yeah. Well, according to my mother, I am, some kind of like cousins fifth removal. So I don't know. My mate James Wright is going to help me out with the genealogy thing online that he did, and it turns out he's related to every single freaking elite member of a Bilderberg group that you've ever conceived of in your life. It's very scary. It scared the hell out of him. Scared the hell out of me. So I just kind of like, ooh.
There's the possibility that he's insane.
Well, it's pretty hard to say that he's insane when he puts all his birth details and everything into a database search and you come back with, like, your fifth cousins to Charlemagne or your fourth cousins to George W. Bush, third cousins to Barack Obama, and sixth cousins to JFK, and you're also related to John D. Rockefeller, and you're also related... You know, like, this is just off the genealogy.com database search.
Just, well, scared for him, honestly.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to be cousins with George Bush.
Oh, yeah. Well, here's the thing, bro. Everybody's related to a whole bunch of people more than they think.
I would hate to be cousins with George Bush.
Yeah. Well, imagine this. Imagine for every bloodline, there's good and bad DNA. All right. What if George Bush had a brother that wasn't Jeb Bush? What if George Bush had a brother that was more like Ron Paul or something like that? All right. That would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but...
The problem is they were both raised by George H.W. Bush, and so they'd both be cocaine, drug-dealing, weapons manufacturers.
bankers, elitists, narcissists, psychopaths, the list goes on.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, I'm doing a show... this weekend about the Bush family.
Mm. Well, there you go. There's a great feminist t-shirt out there that says the only Bush I trust is my own. I thought that was clever, you know. That's
pretty clever, honestly.
Yeah. And, maybe I lost my train of thought here. You know, it's amazing when you think about Bush as a grown man when you just lose your train of thought. Like he does, you know. Maybe I'm misunderestimating myself.
Oh. Just look at any speech Barack Obama's done. He always loses his train of thought. He has to go look at his teleprompter again.
Well, you know, that's the thing. I noticed that. And we did a picture called a toy called the Barack Obobble. You know, the little bobble heads that you have in your car and, you know, they bobble the head up and down as you drive?
Yeah.
Yeah? Well, it's like a Barack Obobble. Instead of bobbing his head up and down, it goes from side to side to the little teleprompters.
I like that. That's clever.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking to a toy manufacturer in Kenya to get it sorted out, but I'm not sure if they'll be allowed into the United States. You know, he might run for president instead of making them toys from Kenya or something. I don't know. Anyway, moving right along, the future. Anybody else out there really think much about the future? I do. I think about the future all the time.
I think about the future every second.
Mm-hmm. And incidentally, have you ever noticed that you never get there? You know? That's the one thing I've figured out is that the only thing that you can't actually make happen any faster, no matter how hard you think about it, no matter how hard you try, is the future. It's the only thing you've got to wait for. But it never waits for you. So I kind of thought, you know, bugger it. I'm going to stop waiting for it. And I'm just going to get stuff done every day. And that's sort of how I work in there. The reality understanding, in terms of consciousness or how you work in the world, etc., works very much in line with how the past and the present and the future all work together. So you've got psychological well-being, physical well-being, spiritual well-being, just like you've got the past, present, and the future. And they all kind of have to be in harmony to a degree in order for them to function properly, right? There has to be a clear past, there has to be a clear present, and there has to be a clear future. How do you clearly define them? Future is something that hasn't happened yet. present to something that is happening right now and past to something that you cannot change. You can look at the past and you can get lessons from it and you can use it as a predictive program for future events. But you can also change those future events in the present, right? So this is how it works, is that you can take control. You really can physically take control of the present moment and change them via sheer act and will. And that power, that really, really massive power that we all have to do something right here, right now, you could, if you're listening to this, you could just suddenly turn it off and, I don't know, smash your computer with a sledgehammer or something. Doesn't necessarily matter. Preferably not something destructive, but it's just an example of how you can be thinking you're about to do, you're just doing one thing, one normal thing, and then just totally change direction and make a huge, massive difference, a huge, massive impact, okay? And smash all of the things that you thought were going to happen to bits, all right? That's what the future is to me, something that has not happened yet and may never happen. Kind of like they talk about in that Will Smith movie, After Earth, fear is a choice, all right? Danger's real. But fear is a choice, because fear is something that comes at you, and you can deal it. You can deal with it. You can choose how to react to it, because whatever you're afraid of does not at present hurt you, and may not ever hurt you. That's why it's a choice, because it's not actually happening. It's not real. The dark cultists. And people have been studying, you know, stuff from ancient Egypt all the way up till now, since the time of King Solomon, know that this power exists. And they've set about creating a system to prevent you from realizing you have that power too. That's how they maintain control of you. It's the easiest way to control anybody, is convince them that they have no power to change their situation. Oh, it is what it is. Oh, there's nothing I can do about it. Oh, well, I'll just accept my fate. Frank that.
Fight back.
Yeah. And that's, again,
the worst thing that's going to happen to you is you're going to die and be more free anyway.
I don't know. I don't see death as freedom. Otherwise, if you really see death as freedom and you're actually campaigning during your life for freedom, then why haven't you killed yourself yet, if that's your conclusion? You see? Mm-hmm. It doesn't equate, does it? It's kind of like the New Agers who believe that there's no such thing as good or evil, right? And I say to them, okay, why do you make health products and try to benefit people's lives if you don't believe in either good or evil? Why are you doing good if you don't believe it exists? All right? See, a lot of people don't practice what they preach is because they don't try themselves on it. They don't question themselves. There's a interesting analogy called the Ballad of the Cosmic Schmuck. I'm not sure if you've heard this. You know what cosmic schmuck means?
I do not, but just to clarify, what I mean by death is free is this life isn't very... our life is control.
Well, I don't know about you, but I don't think our lives are entirely in control, because we can change things. There's parameters to the box, sure, but we can change things. Huge things. In uncontrollable and unpredictable ways, and send out ripple effects that will literally change everything without us even knowing it or having to lift a finger. So, the Ballad of the Cosmic Schmuck. Cosmic meaning big, schmuck meaning idiot. All right, pretty understandable, okay? How do you know if you're the cosmic schmuck? If you never wonder to yourself, if you never stop and sit down and you go, you know what, am I the cosmic schmuck? If you've never done that, then you probably are one. And if you're constantly questioning, am I just being the cosmic schmuck? If you're constantly questioning that, it's impossible to turn into the cosmic schmuck. And another analogy that I can actually use to relate this is that sometimes the methods that you take or the actions that you take to prevent a possible future are often the actions that are required for that possible future to come to fruition. In ancient Rome, there was once rumor of a book so powerful that it was said that any words that were read off of its pages would come true as future. So it is written, so it shall be done. And the emperor spent much money, much time, and much effort, blood was shed in pursuit of this book. They eventually found it at great cost to the empire, and they brought it back to see what it said. The book told them that there would be a grain shortage, and that Rome would starve, and that many would die. The emperor took measures to prevent this terrible possible future by confiscating all the grain from around Rome, putting it in one giant granary, and putting it under guard 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But the granary wasn't constructed properly, and moisture leaked through the roof. Down onto the grain it went, and it made all of it moldy, and all the grain was worthless, and Rome starved. So the very act that they took to prevent their terrible future was exactly what they needed to do in order to make their future terrible. And I found it's quite an interesting story, because it makes me think a lot about things that I don't want get thrust upon me whether or not I want them. You ever notice that? You know, like, have you ever gotten socks for Christmas?
Nope.
See? You don't know what I'm talking about. Some people do. And what that occurs to me is like, I don't know the consequences of my actions. Like, I really don't. Do I? I can't see it happening. I can try and change things. I can sort of assume where stuff is going, but I don't really know. I'm not totally in control, but that doesn't mean that somebody else is totally in control of me. And it's the little choices that we make every single day that make a difference. It's kind of like what Gandalf was talking about on the Hobbit movie. He says it's the actions of ordinary folk, simple acts of kindness and love, that keep the darkness at bay. It's not always great power that rises to challenge great evil.
I can agree with that.
Yeah. And there's a lot of things to be said for the benefits of religion and spirituality, you know. God bless them. But personally, I'm incapable of following, you know. And it's not like I'm giving the finger to God and all of that kind of stuff. Quite the contrary. I actually want to honor my God by doing what he would do in my position. If I have skills, I have talents, and I can help God's children, etc., I will. And I do. And I've had...
You're following his word.
Yeah. And I don't go to church. And I ain't read the Bible. Okay, this realization came to me that you will inherently know right from wrong. You don't necessarily need a book to spell it out to you. You know in your base levels that what you're doing is right, or if what you're doing is wrong. And even if you're confused about it, there'll be lots of deceivers and everything around, you know, telling you, say, oh, you need to do this or you need to do that in order to become this that you want, etc. All these people who tell you how to achieve your dreams that haven't even achieved theirs yet. You know, I can teach you how to be rich. I can teach you how to have 1 million YouTube followers. How many YouTube followers have you got? 28.
That's how many I've got, actually. It's funny.
Well, we'll see what happens after the show as well. So I'll put the link up to your YouTube channel and try and give you a help there because, yeah, I reckon we could get you 100 YouTube subscribers, bro. I've got 15,000 if we upload this this video to my channel and ask people to go to yours and subscribe. We might get over that 100 mark, and then you'll be able to do a lot more with your show and video and software. Yeah,
I'm aiming to get listeners. But thank you for coming on. This is my biggest show ever.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm 6'4". I'm used to it. I'm the biggest guest ever.
I've never had over 8 listeners. In this show, we've had an average of 9.
Oh, wow. That is just a record breaking there, isn't it? Yeah, well, I don't know. I've gone past the live recording thing. Mostly, I just do my stuff pre-recorded and then pop it up on the website, right? So I'm not worried, not in the least. You know, it could be a lot worse.
All the live broadcasts go up as archives.
Well, obviously. But anyway, thanks for having me on your little show here. Glad that you're doing quite well, especially for a 15-year-old kid who can't use his arms or legs. One would say that you're a hero, right? In a lot of ways. But fortunately, you've got knowledge of how bad pride is, and you're going to go like, no, I'm not some hero. I'm not something to look up to. I'm way shorter than you in a wheelchair.
Which, that is the truth. I am much shorter than these people.
Yeah, see, I'm 6'4", and I found out that being tall is a leadership characteristic. Why? Because people are forced to look up to you. I really don't have much of a choice in the matter.
Well, that's good. I like that.
All right. Sounds like my wife has just gotten awake now, awakening to a phone call. The poor woman, she has to deal with me getting up at all sorts of hours in the morning and going shows with 9 listeners. I mean, my goodness, the stuff she has to put up with. Yeah. Hey, actually, coping with things, final words on that. Have some humor about it. All right, really. Even if it's not funny, make some jokes about it. There's a thing called gallows humor. When the chips are down, when things are dark, when it is the worst crap you could ever conceive of in your life, make some really bad jokes about it. And laugh at it anyway. You know, kind of like Doctor Who. Whenever he's about to die or something, he's usually laughing at the thing about to kill him. And then he wins.
Well, Vince, based on what I've seen about your humor, you're very good at the bad jokes.
You know, I love irony, so being good at bad jokes is ironic in and of itself.
And we love it anyway.
Yeah. Again, if you don't laugh, you'll cry. So go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, ladies and gentlemen. That's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question. Eastwood isn't go ahead. Make my news.
And if you guys liked the content we spoke about on this show, please tune in again, because I plan to have much more content like this coming up in the next few weeks, and hopefully for a long time.
Kind of like the Occupy movement. They produced a lot of content. Oh, no. Actually, they were intents. In a way. Anyway. Okay. A second. Anyway.
One more laugh. Well, that was the last laugh for this one.
Yeah, well, I always hoped I'd get the last laugh.
Well, I guess you got one more, because that was pretty good and pretty bad at the same time. Good job. You're very good at those jokes. You really are.
Yeah. Well, my father was a genius, designed over 400 different types of forklift tire, had a 97% market share in the Southern Hemisphere for the distribution of forklift tires, and he invented the methodology of bonding steel to rubber and a number of other things. And my mother was a nurse and a poet. So, you know, I'm just kind of got some of the worst of both worlds here.
And I'm a kid with no humor at all.
Well, it's not true, because you cackle mildly, at least. So if you had no humor at all, there wouldn't even be a cackle. Not even a giggle or a chortle.
I have no ability to make jokes.
Okay.
None at all.
Well, surely the best way to start making jokes is making jokes about yourself, because, I don't know, the thing... Actually, I can't advise people how to make jokes. I can't advise people how to make comedy, because I only tell bad jokes. And the only reason I tell jokes is to amuse myself. I don't care how anybody else reacts to it. I'm having a good time.
Well, I do like the way you think, dude. I want to bring you back for another show in the future. Are you still on for our next Wednesday?
Yeah, sure. I can probably make that. I'll let you know if I can.
Awesome. This time again... Check the archive if you need to remember.
Yeah. It'll be for the New Zealand listening audience, it'll be the 26th, Thursday the 26th at 7:30 a.m. And for the American audience, it'll be Wednesday the 25th at 3:30 p.m. Eastern time.
Mm-hmm. Pacific 12:30, and I don't know the other time zones, so just can...
Well, basically it goes Pacific, Mountain, Central, Eastern. And there's like 2 hours in between Eastern and Pacific. So you can just kind of go like, what's Pacific? It's 12. So that means Mountain time must be 1 and Central time must be 2. And that means Eastern time is 3.
I see. Wow. You finally broke that mystery for me.
Yeah. Well, it comes with when you're a tool on American Freedom Radio, you have to learn those time zones. Oh, well, dude, I was getting up at like 5:30 in the morning. Oh, no. From 3 till 5 o'clock in the morning was my slot on American Freedom Radio for 6 months, bro, 5 days a week.
Oh, that would hurt me.
All right, and because I'm in New Zealand, it's even worse than just doing it at that time in the morning. It's also on your weekend, bro. It also happens on Saturday. So on Saturday morning, you have to be up at 3 o'clock in the morning to be on the radio for 2 hours till 5.
That really does hurt. I'd hate that.
Well, you know, I did it because I wanted to be a famous talk radio show host. I wanted to help people, and I wanted to talk about really deep, meaningful stuff every day and not boring bullcrap, you know? I can't be bothered with that.
Hey, I would do it, just not at 5:30 in the morning.
Yeah. Well, hey, if somebody offers you the opportunity on a big network and stuff like that, and you previously have no opportunity whatsoever, trust me, you'll take it. If
I'm in school and have no opportunity to do that.
Something tells me that being in school doesn't actually grant you a whole lot of opportunities anyway. It didn't me.
That's fair, but I really don't have many. I really don't have any other choice in the matter.
Yeah. That's true. Because it's not like you can just resist and say no. I'm not gonna do all of this. You know, you just can't.
The other thing is, I actually am learning something there.
Would you be learning geometrically more if you were watching an equal time frame of documentaries on YouTube instead of going to school?
I would probably learn more, but...
You would learn geometrically more. You'd learn 10 times... You'd learn it 100 times the speed.
Yeah, but I'm learning in school currently how to speak Chinese and how to film videos.
Yeah. Well, that'll be good. When the U.S. economy gets sold out to Red China, you can be like an interpreter.
Yeah. Have a job.
You know, it's... It's job security, you know?
Agreed.
Like Blackwater. Actually, their job is security, but...
I actually don't know much about them.
Well, they're owned by Monsanto, and they're a private mercenary force.
They're owned by Monsanto. They're evil.
Yeah, tells you about all you need to know. And they were caught tripping balls on acid, driving around Baghdad, shooting random people and innocent civilians in their cars and stuff like that, driving around in Humvees. It was hilarious videos, if you're a psychopath.
Well, people often tell me that I am. So, we'll see.
Yeah.
But thank you for coming on. I'm out of time. I gotta move out of this chair or my legs are going to start to go numb. I've been in here for almost 12 hours.
Oh, wow, man. Okay. You go for your life, man. And thank you very much for having me on the show. And also, a reminder for the Vinnie Eastwood Show audience, this little YouTube channel here, I need you to go in there. I'm going to post this archive on my website, by the way. But I need you to go into Dylan Wade's YouTube channel and subscribe today. It's The Truth Speaks. So if you go to youtube.com and then you run a search under channels for The Truth Speaks, and we'll have links on the homepage. He needs 100 subscribers. He's currently on 26 at the end of this show. So thanks very much, Dylan, and we'll see you again.
Thank you for your help, Vince, and I will see you next time.